food is so, again, experiential. And that's something that I think we're losing, whether you sit around at a table as a family or with it's with friends at a restaurant. I think, yeah, just calling us back to, man, like, let food bring us a really slowed down, beautiful experience. That centers on relationship. Yeah. Like, the food needs to be great, and that's always fun too, and that's really cool, but that's about people. And so I love hearing that. It sounds like it's exactly that. So that's awesome. Hey guys, welcome to the Real Life Podcast, where we talk about exactly that every single week. Real life, which means some episodes might be about a fight we just had, some episodes might be about potty training since we have two toddlers, and some might be about eschatological realism because I love thinking and talking about deep theological things. And maybe we'll talk about all three of those in one episode. But we hope the show feels like hanging out in our living room with us, drinking a cup of coffee as we discuss faith and family and culture and Jesus. Me and my lovely wife, Alyssa, are your hosts, and don't hesitate to hit us up or reach out on social media to say hi or comment on this week's episode. Enjoy. How's it going, guys? I'm Jeff, and welcome back to the Real Life Podcast. We, even though Alyssa's not here, you guys know she's on what we're calling podcast maternity leave right now. I can hear Lucy crying in the other room. We have a special guest with us today on the podcast, and that is Danielle Walker. Danielle, how's it going?
Good. How are you? I can hear the baby too.
Yes, exactly. We are doing good. We're trying to, you know, get our sleep. We have coffee, though. Hey. It is going well. If you guys don't know Danielle, she's an incredible, for those watching on Facebook and YouTube, I got her newest cookbook right here. She writes cookbooks. She has a blog. She dominates on the internet. Me and Alyssa like to call her, I feel like you're almost, the way I like to explain, and this is a fun exercise, where like I'll explain you and then I want you to explain you.
Okay.
We feel like you're almost like the cooking version of Joanna Gaines. And here's why. Two reasons. One, I feel like not only just because you have a large platform and you're killing it and you make awesome stuff just like Joanna does, but for home, but I also feel like you're, not like spirit, what would you call that? Like kind of your ethos of how you kind of go about your stuff. We feel like is, it just feels free and pressureless and burdenless. And I feel like kind of that's why we actually love Chip and Joe so much. And we've even interviewed them a couple years ago. It's because it's such high quality, awesome stuff that's life-giving, but you don't ever feel like everything has to be perfect or everything has to be Pinterest worthy. Not just being like, oh, let's not be Pinterest worthy, but it sucks, right? It's like a high level of quality while really free. And I feel like you do that really well with food. So how would you introduce yourself to people with kind of what you do and what you've been up to?
I like that one. I've heard a paleo Ina Gartner, Jada De Laurentiis.
Oh, that's
before,
a good
but
one.
I actually think I like that one better. So I might have to adopt that.
So you can steal it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I'm most known for my cookbooks. This is my fourth cookbook. And they're all special diet friendly. So they fit kind of within gluten-free. They're all dairy-free, paleo friendly. A lot of the recipes, if you're doing keto, a lot of those will work. So yeah. But I'm a blogger kind of by nature. That's where I got started. So I still have a big kind of tie to the online world because of that. And so I started blogging and then social media. And so I would say I'm a chef and a cookbook author.
Totally.
And I do YouTube videos, a food personality on
the
web.
That. I do feel like you're one of those rare people where the food space to me does seem very divided in the sense of like very mainstream or very internet. And you seem to kind of be a little bit of both, which seems to be, I think, rare. Why do you think that is, or how, or which one do you like better, or any little nuggets on that?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess it's too rare. I don't know that what I'm doing is completely like one of a kind, but I love to mesh the two together because my books really come from requests from my fans. So all of the recipes that are in there are just listening to my readers and what they're asking for and what they're missing. So I think there's a good kind of tie between those two. And that's really, I mean, my blog is where I got a book offer from. So kind of has gone hand in hand all along.
Totally. And then so it's you and Ryan, three kids, am I right?
Yes. Yep.
And you guys in California?
Yep.
Nice. And Ryan, like app developer or software engineer or what does he say he does?
Software engineer. He does iOS apps and he right now he has a startup for Instagram, like an Instagram app essentially.
Yeah, it's a sick app. I never saw it until you posted about Eminem using it.
Yeah.
So legit. And then I looked and I was like, oh, this is actually a really cool idea. It's awesome.
It is. So M&M crashed their site, unfortunately. Oh.
In a bad way or a good way? Because sometimes you can crash it where it really crashes it, or sometimes it's like, okay, we like all this, get it back up quick and get the press or something.
So really good, like in a good way, but that they found some things that they were like, oh wow, okay, we might need to fix that. Yeah. I think he stopped using it for a time because he can't, he's like, you crashed in the middle of my thing. But I mean, he was sending like millions of people at one time to the one page. So they just weren't quite prepared for that
totally.
Yet. So,
totally.
But I mean, for a small business owner or for a blogger or somebody that, you know, does a podcast or sells products, it's an incredible product. So that's what he does. He's our
awesome.
Techie guy.
That's awesome. So,
yeah.
And I feel like that's a match made in heaven for both you guys, just with what you do, with what he does. And it's awesome.
Yeah.
You guys are both entrepreneurial. You guys, it's really, really cool to see that synergy. So we have followed you, I think, and enjoyed your stuff for a couple of years now. Your Instapot orange chicken recipe is my favorite.
Yeah. Amazing.
Love that one. It's so good and so easy. I love your Instapot recipes.
Easy. Oh my gosh.
So
especially
good.
With a new baby. You guys
yes.
need that. For
exactly.
Sure.
And so we have appreciated you from afar. And so it's been really cool to develop a relationship even recently. And then we get to hang out with you and Ryan next month. And then even realizing how many mutual friends we have. I know you're going on tour, I think next year, with Annie and Angie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Downs and Smith, for people that don't know. Yeah.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So my tour starts in January. We actually had our first event last night here. About 90% of the shows have sold out, which is amazing. I did not expect it.
It's hard to fill seats these days, man.
So it is. It is. But we're creating more of an experience for these. Mm. So it's not just your standard book signing. I mean, people are coming. There's a happy hour. They're getting to taste the food from the book. They're getting to have a glass of wine and have just kind of a fun night out. And then there's a cooking demo, and there's a little chat with whoever, you know, me and the guest are, and a Q&A. And so it's just like an awesome swag bags with
Sweet.
All kind of just like my favorite products. So it's a little bit more than just your standard book signing. I kind of dreamt it up last year and just was like, I just want to give people something different, more of an experience. And so I'm working with this amazing team who's kind of planning the whole tour, and we're doing 13 cities throughout the United States. And I have a guest who is a friend of mine joining me in each city for about half of the night. They're kind of coming up on stage, and I'm teaching them a recipe and having a fun chat. Yeah. So last night was amazing. It was really fun.
That's the same thing, or that's different than the tour with Annie and Angie?
Same thing. Same thing. Yeah. So last night was kind of the kickoff night. We're going to take a little break for the holidays, and then we'll be kicking it off January 8th in Portland. So I have 13 cities, and a different person is joining me kind of along the way. So Annie's joining me in Atlanta, and then Angie's joining me in Tampa.
Wow.
And then separately, actually, Annie and Angie and myself are doing a tour with Compassion International in March and April. So that's like a completely different tour. It's like a speaking tour, kind of more of a night of, we're saying, faith, friends, and food. So yeah.
So that first one, that's a little bit more from the cookbook, Eat What You Love, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Where can people find out a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you can go to eatwhatyoulovebook.com.
Okay. It's got
so
all the info.
All the tour dates are on there, all the information about the book. Yeah. All
that sounds cool.
There.
And I feel like that's something I feel like a lot of people don't do well when, like food is such an experiential thing. So rather than just talking about it, like to do something experiential, that's really cool. And I feel like that'll be a really cool experience.
Yeah, I mean, everybody seemed really excited about it last night. I didn't know if it was doable. I mean, that's a big production. It's like you have to find a cooktop and a stage.
Yes.
And I mean, it's a big deal. Like, it's not just me going to bookstores anymore. So I was concerned at first. First, I was concerned that we wouldn't sell any tickets. So I'm incredibly grateful and thankful that those all have sold almost out. And there's only a couple cities left with tickets. And then I just, you know, just talking to people last night and watching them in the audience. And I just think they really enjoyed it. I think, you know, there's just, our time is so busy these days, and our schedules are filled with so many things. And if you're going to get out and take a night out, and especially if, you know, I have a very large demographic of moms. And so I'm like, if it was me, and I'm going to have to get a babysitter and I'm going to have to get dressed and go out, you know, like I would want to make the most of it. And so that's kind of what my goal was for this. I'm like, let's make it a night out, you know, whether it's with your girlfriends or it's a date night or whatever it is, like make
that's
it special
really cool.
and make it stick out in your
kind I feel
of
like food is so, again, experiential, and that's something that I think we're losing, whether you sit around at a table as a family or with it's with friends at a restaurant. I think, just calling us back to, man, like, let food bring us a really slowed down, beautiful experience that centers on relationship. Like, the food needs to be great, and that's always fun, too, and that's really cool, but that's about people. And so I love hearing that. It sounds like it's exactly that. So that's awesome. Hey guys, I want to take a quick break and tell you about this week's sponsor, you guys. And that is the Unbound program. If you guys follow me and Alyssa on YouTube, you have heard us talk about them. We love them a lot. Essentially, Unbound is a better way to do college. They can help you save a ton of money and time on your bachelor's degree. It's kind of like community college, but way more convenient. And you can take online courses and then transfer those to the school that you want to graduate from. And they'll also make sure you don't waste any credit, which I know for me, I went to 3 different colleges in 4 years. So let's just say, they didn't transfer very well. And I wish I had the Unbound program then. Plus, Unbound students do all kinds of things together, and they're an awesome community, including studying abroad together, volunteering, starting businesses, mission trips, and meeting up all over the world. So go to getunbound.org/real life, and you can get a free online quote within just a few minutes. And so it's very much worth your time if you're thinking about going back to school, going to school here soon, or even in the middle of the school, making certain decisions. So again, that's getunbound.org/real life, R-E-A-L-L-I-F-E. All right, love you guys. Okay, so I think when we started following you a bit ago, it was, I think a lot of people resonate with you, is not only, how would I say this? I feel like the way you got into your journey with special diet, gluten-free, and all these different things wasn't just because it was trendy. Right. and so I'd love to hear you talk more about that. If you want to just give, I think your stories, me and Alyssa are really inspired by you and both your guys' story, your family's story. And so we'd love to hear just a little bit more of that, how you would kind of say you got to the place you're at now. And those kind of trials you walked through and how you kind of got to like where you are now with that.
Yeah. So no, I wouldn't have chosen to do this if I think if it was just a trend.
Yeah.
But I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease when Ryan and I were newlyweds just a couple months after, and just was incredibly sick. I was medical leave from my job. I was in and out of hospitals. At one point spent 2 weeks in a hospital in Uganda when we were out there for a trip.
Wow.
Was on really, really high medication dosages and just like nothing was working and everything was that I was taking. And then plus the disease were just really debilitating. And I asked all of the specialists, you know, in the area, just said like, is there anything I can do dietary wise? My specific autoimmune disease is ulcerative colitis and it's in your colon. And so at 22, I mean, I didn't go to medical school and I wasn't a nutritionist, but something just kind of innate, you know, in me was like, okay, this is a disease that's in my colon. Is there something that I'm eating or not getting enough of that, you know, could help? And every doctor said no. And they just kept prescribing medications. And at one point were threatening surgery to remove a portion of my colon or an immunosuppressant drug, which I would go in and have administered through, you know, an IV every 6 weeks and it cuts your whole immune system out. And so those things were kind of our last resort, but I had started seeing some things just through online chat boards about diet and how people with different autoimmune conditions were changing their diet to kind of a grain-free, dairy-free diet. It looks very similar to paleo. At that time, paleo wasn't really much of a thing. And now it's obviously become a lot more popular, but, and so I just kind of grasped onto that and said, well, these people are like, these are real people, not just doctors and their, you know, tests, but these actual people are saying this could help. And I should at least give it a shot, you know, before we go on to these serious medications or perform surgery that would be life altering. And so, you know, that's a very condensed form. It took a lot of years, honestly, of trying different things and, going kind of on and off of things. But once I really kind of, I did an elimination diet, I cut out a lot of things, but, grains, dairy, legumes, anything refined, like refined sugars, I saw an improvement in my health almost immediately. My symptoms improved by 75 or 80% almost overnight. And then it was a journey and still is of, you know, keeping and maintaining that. And then also replenishing my body. I was just so malnourished and just so many other things that I had to work on getting back up. But, that was really the intro into all of that. And then, you know, over time it became blog and books and more.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I think is really cool and inspiring about your cookbooks, about your blog, about your YouTube videos is it's not And we love following people that just love to cook and make awesome food. Yeah, but I feel like because your guys' story is so powerful, I feel like, man, it just resonates, I think, with a lot of people, whether or not they have, like, what's crazy is we don't have, I mean, Alyssa's lactose free. And that's kind of the only allergy we do. We were vegan a couple years ago, but essentially we don't do a ton of restrictions, but we still love your stuff because it tastes good. It looks good. It is good. It's healthy. And I think again, and then also like the story part of it, I think is really just inspiring for a lot of people. Of just thinking intentionally, like to think intentionally about your food, think what you're putting in your body, no matter what your, you know, restriction is or whatever. And so I think, we really appreciate it. What would you, I mean, I think I remember, didn't it get pretty serious a couple times where you almost not like died, but like really pretty bad, pretty low?
Almost died.
Wow.
honestly. Yeah, no. So part of my disease personally is that you end up losing a lot of blood. So there were a couple points where I was so severely anemic and my hemoglobin count was pretty much near death. I had to have blood transfusions to revive me essentially twice over the last 10 years or so. So yes, before I started doing diet, that's how bad it would get. And I'd spend weeks in hospitals and then 3 or 4 months bedridden after that. And that, you know, I was in the hospital a couple times a year and have had, I think, probably 4 or 6 blood transfusions, but haven't had to have that or been hospitalized for this since I started changing my diet.
Wow. That is serious. What did you feel like you learned through that? Not only just you and Ryan, the kids, how was walking through that? I mean, that actually would sound pretty debilitating with even going through life, going through the grocery store, running errands, doing your daily things that you take for granted. How was that journey and how hard was it and how did you kind of walk through it?
Yeah, you can't function much. Mm-hmm. It has been trying, but it's been strengthening. You know, my first major flare up that I had was about a few months after we got married. So we really had to kind of dig in quick. Thankfully, we had been together already for 5 years before that. We were, you know, since high school, so we knew each other really well. But it definitely was a major stressor on relationship at the beginning, but really brought us closer. And Ryan, thankfully, is just an incredible person. And he stepped up and became my advocate, you know, in doctor's offices and even at home of making sure that I stuck with the things that I was supposed to be doing. But it's been, you know, it hasn't been a perfect journey over the years. And even with switching my diet, typically after I have a baby, I get a postpartum flare up just from a whole plethora of things. And anybody with an autoimmune disease typically will experience that. It's just stress is a major factor with autoimmune disease. And there's like almost 400 or more different autoimmune conditions. Wow. So you probably know somebody with an autoimmune disease. You know, it's rheumatoid arthritis and diabetes and Crohn's disease and MS. So like all of those things are considered autoimmune diseases. They're all inflammatory conditions. And stress is a major factor in those. So yeah, so I have unfortunately had flare-ups after each child and usually around the 6 to 9 month mark after they're born, which is, it's really hard. And thankfully, since my first one was born, like I said, I haven't had to go into the hospital, but I've had to spend a lot of time in bed just trying to recover from it. And it's definitely difficult. It's hard on me as a mom because I don't feel like I can be there to provide for my kids and my family. And I also, there's times where it can get so bad where I just can't even spend time with them because I just need to be kind of alone in the room sleeping. And then, yeah, I mean, my husband, you know, working and trying to take care of me plus kids it's tough. It's definitely difficult. We feel like our family is complete at this point. So I think our hope is that now that we've had the babies and the kids, that diet and lifestyle that I'm keeping will actually keep me healthy and I won't experience any of those flares. That's what we're praying for. And that's what I'm believing in. So yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we'll be praying for that too. That's awesome. Thanks. What would you, I know, and you've been pretty public, which has again been another inspiring part of your guys' story of your guys' journey with children. And I think miscarriages, if I'm correct, and one stillborn, is that correct? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I didn't have a miscarriage, but I did have something called a partial molar pregnancy. It's a very, very rare condition that can happen. And that was before my oldest. So that was actually our first pregnancy and it was twins. And there's just with what that is, the one baby actually would have been healthy, but the other one wasn't. And it's very, very odd, but they end up having I'm not going to probably describe this well enough medically, but it's something where they have an extra like half a set of chromosomes. And so it was frightening. It was brand new, you know, we're newly married. It can actually turn into a tumor, which is really strange. Wow. So I had to have monitoring for like 6 months afterwards to make sure that there wasn't like a cancerous growth happening after that. But it was, you know, it's still a pregnancy loss. And for us, that was still, you know, we thought we were having twins, and then you go in and find out that, you know, one has this molar pregnancy, and then that the other one couldn't survive. So yeah, so that was really difficult. And then we went on to have our son, who's now 8, Asher. And then, after him, when he was about 3, we were pregnant again with a little girl named Ayla, and found out around, 25 weeks or so that she had a genetic condition that most likely wouldn't allow her to survive after birth. So we chose to carry her and I was able to deliver her, and she lived for about 45 minutes after birth. So,
and you've shared that story on your blog, right? And even with some pictures and stuff. Is that againstallgrain.com?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find it. You can even just search. Her name was Ayla Jane, and you can search for that, and there'll be stories come up. I'm writing a book about her at some point. It's one of those things that I've wanted to share more details. Yeah. I, you know, it's so interesting because I already had a platform at the time, and oddly, I had a second cookbook coming out, and she would have been our second child, and so we had this big thing where we announced in the book, and my due date were within like weeks of each other, and so. Wow. We were like, oh, well, let's let everybody in on this, you know, so you announce it and then you get this news and you're forced kind of with this decision of, okay, well, you've got, I think, you know, this was years ago, but I think at that time I probably had 50,000 people or so that were kind of along for the ride. And it's like, do you choose to let them in on this, or do you, you know, kind of step out and go into the dark? And we just said, well, you know what, if our story can help somebody else that's going through something like this, then we've been given this platform and we can share it in hopes of helping other people. And it's been, I mean, my gosh, we've shared her story. I've shared it on the Today Show, and I've shared it, you know, in lots of different places. And at one point, one of the articles I wrote or one of the videos that we did had like 15 million views. And it's just like, and then I'm getting, you know, just this influx of emails and notes from parents and women all over the world who have suffered child loss that, you know, are feeling the freedom to be able to share their child and to be able to grieve. And so it's something that we never would have expected, you know, going into what I started doing, and that it's turned into almost like I almost have like two different kind of stories and platforms that I share on and that touch people in different ways. So
One, I feel like I don't feel like there's a lot of stigmas anymore in our culture. People talk about, you know, a lot of things, but I feel like one that still seems around to me is that, we still seem very quiet about miscarriages, stillbirths, things in regards to pregnancies and births, child loss, etc. And I don't know why it is, because it actually is more prevalent than a lot of people think. You know, you probably your neighbor, you know, your neighbor's probably gone through a miscarriage if you hadn't, or your friend, like it's very prevalent in some other versions. But so I actually think, man, I wish more of us, you know, would share in that regard, because I think people feel really isolated and alone in a lot of that stuff, and kind of can spiral, it can turn dark. So what did you kind of learn about all that with the process?
I mean, I was very naive to pregnancy loss and...
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, I think people just kind of like, whoa, this actually happens, you know, and people don't talk about it. Yeah.
You get married and you think like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get married and I'm going to get pregnant. Yeah. I'm going to bring a baby home. And you just don't think about things like stillbirths. And like, I mean, now I've been just... So I've become so aware of all of the different genetic, you know, conditions that can happen and things that can have, that can cause you to lose a child. And people have shared so many different things. And I just had, I had no idea. And then even, you know, before you've gone through something, if you have maybe heard a story about someone, you're kind of just like, oh, that's really terrible and sad, but you know, you just don't think it could ever happen to you. And I think, you know, I think part of it could be, it's kind of almost like women, like how they don't share all the details of birth and labor. Mm. Like, I don't want to scare you. So I don't know if it has something to do with that, but yes, there absolutely is. I don't know if I'd call it a stigma, but almost, yeah.
It's really people quiet don't feel, on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think people just don't know how to handle it if there's somebody around them that's lost a child and they don't, you know if it's okay to talk about it or if it's like, so there's this tiptoeing around that I think ends up kind of becoming this like weird dance where everybody's kind of tiptoeing around each other. But really for the people who have been through it, all they want is to be able to have their baby acknowledged or their pregnancy acknowledged or somebody to remember a date or a name. So that's the one thing that I just always encourage people when they come to me and, say, I've got a friend that's going through this or, my daughter-in-law just had this happen. Like, what would you recommend? And that's, I think the biggest thing that I've learned is that every mom just wants their child remembered. And so, to be able to say their name to them or call them on the date, that is, it means more than anything.
That's awesome. I think that's a really good way to put it. And I think that's true. I think there is that weird paradox where we think like, oh, don't talk about it. It's sad. It's grievous, or maybe they don't want to bring it up because it's still sensitive. But in reality, a lot of times that's actually the thing that gives hopes of like, you're acknowledging what happened. You're showing hope. You're talking about it. You're acknowledging reality and recognizing that child's life and story. So that's a really good point. What do you feel like? I mean, even just hearing all this, I feel like you guys have suffered and gone through trials more than the average person. What do you feel like you guys have learned through that? And as a follower of Jesus, what do you feel like how that journey's been with all of it and in that kind of regard?
Oh man,
that's big a tough question.
Yeah, we have. And it can be really easy to kind of go there and be like, gosh, like why have we had to go through this much? And mm-hmm. I know that there's always somebody out there that's gone through more. And so I kind of have to try to keep putting that into perspective. But I don't know. I think what we try to focus on is we feel like God has a really big purpose for us in our lives. And yes, I mean, we went through more. We had been married probably for 5 years when we lost Ayla and then had already dealt with all of my health stuff. So we went through more in that 5 year period that most couples go through in their entire 30 marriage.
Years. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, in terms of our relationship, it couldn't be stronger. There's a lot of couples that go through child loss that end up not making it through because it's just such a trying time on your relationship and your emotions and your faith. That I think, I'm grateful for that, but I really do feel like there's a purpose for everything that we've gone through. Not that God has caused it to be
totally,
able
yeah,
to.
Yeah, those are two different things for sure.
But, just focusing like we've always done with my health of just kind of focusing on like, okay, this happened. So now what do we do? Because I still can't explain why it happened and I don't know that I ever will. And but I can either sit here and, keep it all in, or I can choose to share it and try to help people in some way. And so that's kind of just the way that we've approached it. I will say faith especially for me has just, it's been an interesting four years, yeah. Just a lot of questions and a lot of time of just kind of needing some, just some space,
totally.
I for a while I had pressure on myself of like, okay, I have to figure these questions out and I need to be back, walking with the Lord and I need to, not be questioning things because that's not what he wants. And at some point, I think actually through Angie Smith and then also through my husband, it was just that freedom from them as friends and also as believers to just kind of be like, No, like you take your time. I'm not going to pressure you. Totally. I will sit here and listen to you. I will agree with you and say that I've gone through those questions as well, but I'm not going to say, ever like you need to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And I just started to realize like God doesn't want that either. And he doesn't, in the grand scheme of things, this time of me trying to figure this out and asking those hard questions and taking kind of some, some space and trying to figure that out is going to be a blip on the radar. And I've, with my health and then with her, I go through those kind of valleys of of that. And every time I come out stronger on the other side. And so I think I just always am like, just have to look to get there. It doesn't matter when I get there, as long as I get out. I've got to get out. I can't like stay in this. But yeah, so we've definitely learned lots and are still learning, I feel like, a lot, especially on the side of with Ayla and just losing her.
Well, I feel like, and it's and I talk about this, I think, in one of my books, where we're very much in the West, America, our ideology, the way we think, the air we breathe is very much, we want a God that is very answer-based, right? Like the just, right, you know, right, fact-based, give us. And that's even how we take tests in school, right? Like we don't actually study to learn anything. We study to just, you know, have the answer to put it down on paper so we can move on, kind of like a checkbox. When it's like, yeah, he's like, we want an answer-based God, but he's a journey-based God, right? Like he walks with us. He wants to be in relationship with us. And like you said, I love what you said. It's like, you know, when you're looking at over 80 years, and then, you know, even a decade or even two decades is still, you know, a season or a chapter, you know? And so, and yeah, he wants to walk with us. And I feel like that is usually where the actual growth and relationship is in the wrestle. And then you read that. And then I feel like if we actually would read our scriptures, it's like you open up Psalms and David was the, like David says he hates them. And David says, I don't like you right now. And David says, this is terrible and I'm dying and you're going to kill me. And like, it just goes on and on. Like, man, and that's, and what's crazy is like, that's actual scripture. Like that's holy text that's been passed down for 2000 years. And it's literally, and then even Moses, like Moses talks back to God, almost like a, you know, like a undisciplined child when God says, hey, why are those people burning that calf thing? You know, and I told him not to do that. And he's like, that's your fault, you know, or that's on you, or that's not me, you know, that's your people, not my people. And so it's like, you know, blames, like there's just so many, there's an honesty in the scripture with the people of God that I think we weirdly have kind of deleted from our version of Western Christianity, when a lot of times that's where the actual growth and work is like just to be honest. And that even, I think the dovetail of that I've even been considering lately is, I feel like even too, we also are allergic, Western Christians are allergic to like sharing current struggles, right? We're very, it's like, no, I don't like God right now. And I might not like him till next year, right? It's like, you can say that, and that's okay. And I feel
but most people don't.
Exactly. They people want to say like, oh yeah, 5 years ago, this or that. And I get that. Cause I feel like but a lot of that is actually tied in more to our cultural air we breathe than I think we realize. Cause a lot of other cultures and time periods, and specifically the context of the first century or the Old Testament, very much had a lot more space to wrestle, a lot more space to doubt, and still be very much like, you're not considering, am I a follower of Jesus or not? You know, you're not rethinking all that. It's just, that's part of being a follower of Jesus. So that'd be a boring story if you all just kind of, you know, we've just believed one thing and lived it for 80 years. So there's tension. It's like, it's a drama. And then it's in like any relationship, there's ups and downs and there's seasons. So I loved that. I think that's really good and profound what you said. Let's pivot a little and talk about, well, first of all, let's talk about the new book. So Eat What You Love, those on Facebook and YouTube, I'm holding it up right now. You can see it. For those listening on audio, you can go check it out on Amazon. We love it already. We've had it for maybe like 2 weeks now when people are listening. I think it's been out for like maybe a month, but I love it. I feel like what I love about it most is, and I feel like you do this well in your other ones too, but I really noticed it in this one. I feel like a lot of cookbooks for me, I feel like this new one is split up so well in like practical needs. You know what I mean? Like I feel like people go to cookbooks, not necessarily just because they want kind of random meals, but it's like usually for like a particular need, right? Like, oh, I need a snack right now. Snack section. You know, I need like an Instapot recipe. And so I love how you really kind of, it feels very family friendly. Not only just individual friendly, but family friendly. So maybe talk about it, the heart behind it and what you're excited for it and all that.
Yeah, well, you know, I think I mentioned at the beginning, but my recipes usually come from people's requests, and family favorites and comfort foods are definitely kind of amongst the top requests. And I think it's the things that people really feel like they have to miss out on, and they don't want to lose kind of the traditions and the memories
that are
tied
to eat special or whatever.
You know, so it's like you find out you have to go gluten free or grain free or whatnot, and you're just like, oh, I can't ever have my mom's chicken pot pie again, or whatever it is, you know, or like, oh, I have all these recipe cards for my grandmother that I used to love and use, and now I can't use 90% of them because they have ingredients in it that I can't have. And so it was kind of the reason for this book. It was, you know, entitled that way because it's like, you can still eat the foods that you love, even, you know, just in a bit of a healthier fashion and with some of those main ingredients kind of subbed out. But because this way of cooking definitely does take a little bit more time. You have to cook a little bit more from scratch, you know, and so I wanted to also really incorporate some things in there to make it a little bit more doable for people. So like the Instant Pot, the one sheet pan meals, you know, slow cooker and making things ahead and freezing and batch cooking, which there's a lot of that as well, just to try to, you know, take a little bit, a little bit of the pressure out for people. Cause it's definitely intimidating for some at the beginning and can be, you know, a kind of a deterrence for changing your diet. And if you are faced with something like I was, where you really do need to change it and change it immediately, I don't want the, you know, the pressure of having to make everything and how long it takes or whatnot to be the thing that stops you. And so I wanted to definitely include some of those things as well.
Yeah, no, I feel like they're great and they're awesome. And we absolutely, and most of all, they taste really good. I feel like a lot of times, sounds bad, but a lot of times the special restriction, even like, so when we were vegan for a season, you know, a lot of that, you get some of those cookbooks, you're like, am I eating grass right now? I don't know. You know, am I just eating grass?
True.
But then there was a couple of vegan cookbooks we got. We're like, man, this is killer. This, like, you can't tell the difference. This is amazing. So, and I feel like your book is right up there with it, where it is just like, no matter what it is, it's top notch. It's killer. The breakfast hamburgers, love those.
Thank you. That's like a staple. During the process of writing the cookbooks, that is so, it's funny that you say this. My husband always, like, his nice way of telling me that something needs to continue to be tweaked until it's perfect is like, this tastes healthy.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's kind of like our thing. We're like, if it tastes healthy, then I need to go back and keep fixing it. And so, you know, that's always my goal, is to get the food to be good enough for both somebody who has to eat that way and somebody who doesn't. Like, I want you to be able to make one meal and host whoever's in your home, and whether or not they have dietary restrictions, they're going to love the food regardless.
Totally. I love that.
And not know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Again, people wouldn't know. And so I love that. What do you, one question we got that I want to make sure we ask, because I asked some people to ask some questions, and that definitely a repeating question that a lot of people wanted to know, which I thought was a great question, is how have you guys just personally walked through that whole dance of like, okay, I'm going over to someone's house, but I have restrictions, and then there's always different levels. Like, it's different when you're in a relationship with someone versus like, you know, a corporate work thing. But like, how do you, how do you kind of walk through that whole thing of, you know, just, I guess, communications, expectations, when you go somewhere, any practical tips you have, stuff like that. There was a lot of people that actually asked that one.
Well, so I always say, I mean, I will talk about more when I first started. Now I am a little bit lucky in that I'm kind of like, if you know me, you know that this is what I do for a living. So I don't really ever have to explain
it. When you're famous
for
this, then they know what you're bringing in or what kind of diet or restrictions you have.
Yeah. People usually are pretty good at accommodating, but, you know, when I first started out, if we were going to somebody's house, I would offer to bring a couple things. Just, you know, find out, hey, what are you making? And can I bring a salad and a side dish or whatever it was, so that I knew at least that I would have two things to eat there. Because that's the last thing you want with, you know, dietary restrictions, is like, go to somebody's house and just have to pass on everything and sit there with nothing on your plate and eat afterwards or eat before. And so that was a nice way for me to be able to do it at the beginning. And then really, as people started getting interested in what I was doing, and as I started writing these cookbooks, thankfully my friends and family would start making things from it. And that's you know, what I'm like, I know not everybody has that type of a support system, but if you can find one friend or family member that can help you and support you in that way, where you can feel like, oh, I can go to their house and they'll make something, or I can, you know, bring something, I think that that's just so important.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, I'm like, you want to find those friends that are willing to do that for you. Yeah. The type of friends, you know, that aren't going to just be like, oh, too bad, everybody else can eat this, so I'm going to make it, but you can't have it. And so I think it's really nice, you know, as I'm somebody that likes to host, and I always ask my, you know, people who are coming over before they come, like, hey, do you have any allergies? Yeah. You know, is anybody allergic to shellfish or peanuts, or is there anything people don't like? Because that's kind of the goal as a hostess, is to make your company feel welcome and to make them feel, you know, at home. And so I think from both sides, if you're hosting, I think it's really important to reach out to whoever's coming and just ask them that, you know, and hey, is there anything, you know, that you'd love for me to make? Or if, you know, if you're willing to do that, I think that's huge. Or do you have a favorite? Cause you know, like, especially around the holidays, it can be difficult for people. You know, you're hosting Thanksgiving and you find out that somebody's cooking that's gluten-free. And if you have no idea what that is, you wouldn't even know that, you know, stuffing totally. Wouldn't be gluten-free. And this, yeah. you know, like it's a lot to learn at first. So if you don't know, I think, you know, you can ask that person, just be like, hey, do you have a favorite recipe that I could make? Or totally. Do you have a favorite cookbook that I can look through and maybe look at some of those recipes? I have Celebrations cookbook is all holiday recipes. But yeah, I think those are some of the things, you know, I think definitely offering to bring something. And then if it's a corporate thing, I mean, if you're eating out these days, most of the time
we'll
you
options.
Can modify. Yeah, you can modify things. You can have options. And, you know, I know some people are concerned about looking like they're being high maintenance or if you're going out. And so sometimes if it was going to be a big group, I would either call ahead of time and just say like, hey, I'm coming in with this big group. I have, you know, dairy and gluten allergy. Can you just let me know in advance, like what things on the menu I can order so that I'm not the one that's like holding the group up
asking 20 questions.
Right. So, I mean, that's like a good thing, you know, or you show up a few minutes early and you just say, hey, can I just talk to the server really quick? I just, you know, want to find out what I can order. And so I think those are some of the things. I would also usually, if we were ever going out, I would kind of always offer to be the one who picked the restaurant, you know, like I'll find somewhere because then I knew that we would be going somewhere where I could eat something. And you're not stuck, you know, at, I don't know, somewhere that you just like can't order anything off the menu. So yeah, those are probably some of the best tips I think I have for it.
That's really good. That's helpful. And I feel like people just have to remember too, kind of what I said earlier, like food is about relationship. And so you never want food to stand in the way of relationship. And there's totally ways to just, you know, communicate in love and there's ways to not, there's ways to, I think it's kind of almost like a mutual servanthood too, right? I feel like that's the part I love about it. Of like, we don't have as many restrictions as some of our friends, you know, and Maui's very much a crunchy place. So you got some people that are totally eating weird. There's for trendy reasons, some people totally health reasons, some people this, some people that. So you kind of have to have like a swath here and a library of like how people eat. But I love it. I don't feel like I get burdened by that. I feel like to me, like you said, like when we invite people into our home, we're inviting them to our table. And like, we want them to feel like they, you know, meet with the Lord in a really special, regular, sacred way at our table in a relational way. And so to do that, one of the easiest ways to do that is to show them that you want to serve them and want to care about them. Right. And so like, I always tell people like, totally. Like, so I almost take it as a challenge of like, man, I'm going to make the best, you know, gluten-free this or the best vegan this. And I want to see if they like it. And if not, then I say, hey, can you give me something? And then we have friends on the reverse that are the opposite too. If they say the exact same thing that you say, like, hey, can we bring something? Can we, you know, can we make it? Or can I come over and show you how to do it? Or so I just think like remembering that it's centered on relationship and there actually is a really fun opportunity to actually kind of serve each other and really be like, man, this is actually, we're both kind of, the table equalizes everyone and you get a really cool opportunity for that. So I love that. I think those are really, really good tips. Let's, for time's sake, let's end on or kind of close up on, what do you feel like, I feel like another one question we got and that I kind of wanted to hear from you is, what do you feel like you've learned about food or the correlation you see between food and like following Jesus and kind of how you see the table and food and walking with the Lord and any correlations or insights there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things. I think one of the things that has become kind of more of a goal of mine, and it kind of goes in line with what we were talking about, but just gathering around a table has been lost in our culture. You know, I mean, it's people are running and grabbing something quickly to eat out or going through drive-throughs or, you know, everybody's eating at different times, especially like in just the family unit, let alone having people into your home. And so I think my recipes and kind of what I try to do is to try to create that thing that, you know, like you said, like where the food isn't dividing you, but where it can really bring people together and it encourages people to get into the kitchen and cook together or to host, you know, and have people around your table. And I just think that community is lacking in so many of the areas of, you know, our culture. And I think that's what that was intended for us and what, you know, God would want for us. And I do think food has always been the center of that. You know, that's why people have come around the table. So that's kind of always been my goal. And from the health side of things, you know, something that I didn't just think about, but also, you know, didn't really expect, but just there's these families that, you know, somebody in the family is really ill. And for the most part, my followers, you know, it's like I hear a lot from the women and the moms. And so there's these moms who are bedridden or is so sick that they can't make dinner for their family, but you know, they switch their diet and they're seeing so much improvement. And that's something that's been, I think probably one of my favorite things that I hear was just that, you know, somebody has been able to get well enough to be back and to be making food and to be bringing their family around the table again with food that is actually nourishing their bodies and not hurting it, which is also kind of amazing. And then honestly, you know, I mean, it sounds so simple, but one of the things I love to say is that the diet that I follow is literally the way that food was intended to be, the way that God created it, right? So yeah. I'm like, this is like, this is not a medication that I'm pushing, and this isn't like a supplement that, you know, I'm like, this is
just like, eat normal, don't eat weird.
Yeah. Well, and like the food that, like, before we messed a lot of it up with the agricultural revolution and just like all the processing and the chemicals. And it's just like, it's actually the food in its like true state, the way that it was supposed to be eaten, which is kind of profound that it's what's so healing for your body as well.
Yeah. That's funny you said that. I'm always like, guys, what a mind blowing revolutionary truth that we should just actually eat food, how it grows or is produced in a very natural, normal way. Like, oh, this tomato just popped off the vine right here. I should probably eat it like that, even though it looks a little small. Like your food should actually go bad, by the way. Right. And if it doesn't, I don't know if I would call it food. Right. Even though I still do love my Cheez-Its. I'm not going to hate on that. But speaking of that, I think you have like a Cheez-It recipe in yours, don't you?
I do have a Cheez-It recreation in that book. Yes.
Yeah. And it's good. So we'll have to try that one. But yeah, I think that's always one thing I always tell people is like, and it's sad because Christianity has become so much about like, you know, knowing the right answers or doing the right things, when in reality, like, we are the most tabled religion, meaning like the table is so sacred to Christianity, right? Like when Jesus wanted to explain the biggest event in human history, i.e. him dying on the cross for our sins and going to resurrect, he literally said like, let's eat. Like he took a meal to kind of explain himself. He didn't get out the whiteboard. He didn't go to a seminary and say, let me explain it to you. He just said, hey, let's eat. And that'll kind of explain the biggest event ever. Like, that's awesome, right? And then even I heard a Jewish person, it was hilarious, say that, like, similar with the Old Testament, right? Like, pretty much every Jewish holiday and everything God commanded them to ever celebrate was basically, he made it a meal, right? And it was basically someone tried to kill us. God did something awesome. Now let's eat. Like, that's the three-part series of every Jewish holiday. I'm like, and that's what they're celebrating, basically. And God saved us. And so, yeah, I think that's so true. What, to end, what would you guys say? So we got what would you say you want people to kind of find you on? What do you want them to read? Where do you want them to head? I know Eat What You Love just came out. Yeah. Guys, go read it. Go check it out. We love it. You also got celebrations. You got a YouTube channel. Yeah. You got all the stuff. But yeah, what would you push people to or want them to go to?
So I have 4 cookbooks. You can get any of those. Currently, Celebrations and Eat What You Love are at Nationwide and Costco, even in Hawaii.
Oh, nice. That's rare. We always get left off the list.
I know. No, it is. I've seen pictures of people in Hawaii seeing it. So you can go get it there. You can get the new book at Target, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of that good stuff. But I'm on Instagram just at Danielle Walker. You can find me on Facebook at Against All Grain. My blog is againstallgrain.com. So yeah, you can kind of connect with me. I'm the most active on Instagram. So if you want to connect with me, I think these days, that's usually where most of us are at. But I talk, you know, it's not just food. I talk a lot about lifestyle and about parenting. I'm a working mom. And so it's a lot of that. And, but yeah, you can come find me over there for recipes and just for kind of just daily stuff.
Totally. So yeah, go ahead and follow her, guys. Danielle Walker, like she said, on all the platforms, but we're like you as well. Instagram's the best. Facebook kind of sucks, but you gotta have it. It's like, you gotta submit to the man these days.
I'm still there. I'm
exactly.
still on Facebook.
We are too.
Definitely more present on Instagram.
And Instagram just feels a little bit more like an actual real people community, not just people that hate each other. So it's awesome. So, but awesome. Well, hey, well, thanks so much for being on, and we appreciate you.
Thank you. It was good talking to you.